I want to thank Joanne again for taking the lead on the shiur this year, and hopefully, you know, when Linda's back next week, we'll be more at full strength. But I didn't want to wait, you know, given the delayed opening, you know, with all the chagim. So this is the latest in the season we've ever started. So I just want to talk about one aspect of Parshat Bereishit that we just finished reading, which is, I think, an underappreciated aspect of the Parsha. You know, Sefer Bereishit, one of the main themes is, of course, the changing of people's names. Avram to Avraham, Sarai to Sarah. Of course, we have Yaakov and Israel, and you know, that's not a total name change. But we know that name changes are a very significant thing. We just ended the Torah, Hosea and Yehoshua, and back to Hosea at the end. But if you think about it, the first name change in the entire Torah is the woman that we typically call Chava was not originally called Chava. In fact, she was called the Isha. Adam commented after, according to the Medrash, trying to find a mate in the animal kingdom. Adam commented, Zos hapam etzem me'atzamai, of my very bones, uvisar mi'bisari, of my very flesh, lizos yikare isha. Her name will be Isha, and I guess this was not the most original name of all time. Ki me'ish lukachazos. She came from the Ish, so she will be the Isha, basically.
Also called, I also thought of that, but he's also called Adam, which means man, right?
Right.
So he's called man.
Yeah, and what's interesting is that he gives himself a slight promotion. He doesn't call, you know, he doesn't call her Adama, she was taken from the Adam, Ish, which is actually a term associated with Chashiva. So you've actually, John, put your finger on a major issue, which is how he sees himself versus the way that God will later chastise him. Ki afar ata vel afar tashuv, is that you've aggrandized yourself, perhaps inappropriately. In the immediate aftermath of the sin of the Eitz Hadas, we're told, Vayikra Adam Shem Yishto Chava, Ki Hi Haisa Eim Kol Chai. So this is the first name change that we have in the Torah. And there's this interceding story of the Eitz Hadas. And the question is, you know, why exactly was the Isha's name changed to Chava? We understand why she should be Chava, which the consensus in the Rishonim is the same name as Chaya, because she has the capacity to produce life. So Rashi and a whole school of Rishonim who follow Rashi's interpretation basically say that the sin of the Eitz Hadas had nothing to do with it, and it was just an interruption of sorts. The previous section of the Torah is Vayikra Adam Shemos, L'chol ha-beima, lof ha-shamayim, l'chol chayas ha-sadeh. Adam's busy naming everything. So this is just sort of picking up from where we left off. In contrast, the Radak does think that the sin of the Eitz Hadas has something to do with it. I'm going to go in a different direction than the Radak, but just to put the Radak onto the record, the Radak says, yeah, now that there was a consciousness of their nudity and their sexuality, so the idea that Chava was capable of producing life itself became of greater note to Adam. After all, they haven't yet had any children. It's actually only after the story of the Eitz Hadas that the Torah says that Adam Yadas Chava Ishto. So it's interesting that she wasn't yet a mother, so this was an anticipatory name. But we have that dispute amongst the Rishonim. So I want to try to relate to that question, but I want to do it through a particular lens of Mishnah and Pirkei Avos. So, and this I think is a way of understanding Parshas Bereishis. I like to understand it through the lens of this particular Mishnah, and hopefully that will give us an understanding by the time we come back to this question at the end of this year, what exactly was animating Adam's mind when he changed the name of his wife, his Ezer Kenegdo, from Isha to Chava, and why that name change is really so significant. So the Mishnah Avo says the following, Rabbi Eliezer HaKapar Omer. So Rabbi Eliezer HaKapar is one of the Tanaim, and he says that there are three things that are literally, I'll use the exact expression, motzien es ha'adam min ha'olam, that can remove a person from the world. It seems to be, according to many, the Rishonim, a way of saying, certainly the Rambam interpreted this way, that it destroys a person's inner world. It corrodes a person's spirituality. And those three things are hakina, envy, excessive envy, vehatava, and being incapable of controlling one's desires, lacking self-discipline, v'hakavod, and having an exaggerated sense of self. These three things, any one of these three things, can really destroy a person's inner world. Certainly all three of them would be even more problematic. So you think about the various parties that sin throughout Sefer Bereishis, and that it wasn't just sort of an isolated desire, but he may have even been jealous. Mm-hmm. Who would he be jealous of? Of Adam, right? That the Nachash is interesting insofar as the Torah presents the Nachash as sort of at an liminal space between the animal kingdom and the human realm. Right? HaNachash haya arum mikol chayas. The Unkla says that it means he was chakim, that he had intelligence. And intelligence isn't just a random quality, but intelligence seems to be a defining human quality. Rashi says that which separated out human beings is that they were given day of a dibur. Unkla's focus is on their capacity for articulation. Rashi is focused on their capacity for cognition. Hein ha'adam haya kechav menu ladas tova ra. That human beings and their capacity for cognition. So if the Nachash is arum mikol chayas hasadeh, he's already in a kind of a space between the animal kingdom and humans, and he's obviously upright at that point, and he perceives himself wrongly, but he perceives himself as a potential mate for Chava. That's, I think, a very compelling interpretation. So if you think about sort of the hierarchy of the Bria, you have God above, or God should be above, then you have Adam and Chava, then you have the Nachash, and then you have the animal kingdom. Now, just to add a little bit to this model here for a second, I think what makes this particularly compelling is that the Nachash has an argument on its face that doesn't strike us as particularly sensible. But in light of a comment of the Ramban, I think is actually highly, highly suggestive. So the Nachash says to Chava that the reason that God doesn't want you to eat from the fruit of this tree is he knows that if you do, you will be like God himself. So that's a funny argument to make. Like, why would it be that eating from the fruit of the tree could confer an elevated status on the person? So the Ramban has a disagreement with Rashi as to what human beings and animals were allowed to eat. So Rashi says the human diet and the animal diet was actually one and the same. But according to Ramban, that was absolutely not the case. The Ramban takes the view that only human beings, as opposed to animals, were allowed to eat fruits altogether. So according to that logic, the different places along the hierarchy of creation were marked by capacity to eat fruit. So the Nachash is basically saying, just like the difference between you guys and me is that you're allowed to eat fruits in general, that he has this whole dialogue with her, then it's reasonable to assume that the difference between you and God, one level up, is that God is the only one who can consume these fruit and you guys can't. So that's the nature of the argument that's being made. So Nachash actually has a very sophisticated argument according to the Ramban, which we should expect because he was Arum Mikol Chayas HaZadeh. He wasn't foolish. He was actually highly intelligent. So that would emerge in the Ramban. So arguably the Nachash is acting, as Rav Yoni notes, certainly out of a sense of desire, but I would say that with a sense of jealousy towards Adam. Achava, we don't even have to guess. The Torah says, Vatera ha'isha ki tov ha'etz l'machal v'chi tavahu le'inayim, that at some point, Chava became filled with a desire. She was unable to control herself, either with respect to the Nachash, according to Midrashim, that they were intimate with each other, and the Gemara, and with respect to the fruits that the Nachash was advertising. So here of Kina and Tava, if you want to think about the sin of Cain for a second, I think that has a lot to do both with jealousy of the fact that Hevel's korban was accepted, but also kavod, that he felt ashamed and humiliated that God did not respond to his korban. After all, he was the first one to offer a korban, and that was deeply vexing and deeply troubling to him that would be the case, and he feels ashamed and humiliated, and he has to kill Hevel, because Hevel, of course, had his korban accepted, and it was just an intolerable thing from Cain's point of view. So, Akina ve'atava ve'akavod, motzinas adam mina olam, the consequences for the Nachash, for Chava, for Cain, we don't have to enumerate them right now, they're known to all of us, were very, very significant. So through the lens of this particular Mishnah and seeing how much these basic human vices are at play throughout Parshas Bereishis, I think we can now go back and maybe understand how a moment of reflection and reckoning in the wake of the sin of the Eitz Hadas caused Adam to reevaluate his relationship with the woman that he called the Isha, and he understood that he hadn't fully appreciated who she really was and felt that her identity needed to be changed. So, just to go back now to the original question, the the sense that one gets when one reads the pasuk "Lizosi kare isha ki meish lukachazos" is that Adam perceives of the woman that's with him as secondary to him. Literally, she emerges from him, and that her identity is wrapped up in the fact that she just came from him, and that's really all there is to say about her and her identity. Yeah, he's excited about it. Zosapa metzem yatzamay b'sari b'sari lizosi kare isha ki meish lukachazos. That he sees her very much as an extension of him. We know that when he's finally confronted and pinned down by God as to, you know, what went wrong, what's his defense? He says, Ha'isha, right? Asher natati. It's either her fault or it's your fault, but it's definitely not my fault. Right? Ha'isha asher natata li, hi nat la li min ha'etz v'alcha. So one way of looking at the name change, so it's an interpretation my wife is partial to, I should note, is that Adam, in fact, is distancing himself from the Isha. She's no longer defined vis-a-vis him. He feels betrayed by her, that she did not serve him well. So he's not going to highlight the fact that she came from him anymore. He's highlighting a different aspect of her being. And this would be supported by the Medrash cited by Rashi, that Adam and Chava had a very long separation of a period of 130 years in the aftermath of the sin of the Eitz Hadas. I think that is a viable interpretation. I think it would be suggested by the Medrash cited by Rashi. I'd like to explore another interpretation based on a different school of thought within the Midrashim, that Adam begins a process of tshuva. You know, God tells him that he's made a very serious mistake, that the consequences are literally catastrophic. Now mortality has entered the human equation. So not only will it be more difficult for Adam to sustain himself, but ad shuvcha el ha'adama, ki mimena lukachta, ki afarata ve'el afar tashuv. You are of the dust, and you will return to the dust. And it would appear, based on the simple reading of the psukim, that the very notion of mortality has been introduced. The very next pasuk is, Vayikra Adam shem yishto chava, even before what we think is the actual response we always think about, and then what happened, God had compassion on them. The Gemara considers this to be the first case of Malbish Arumim. Vayas Hashem Elokim la'adam lishto katnos or vayal bishem. That actually happens in the next pasuk. The first thing that happens after the sin of the Eitz Hadas is that Chava's name is changed from Isha to Chava. So what I'd like to suggest, presuming that it is actually a moment of reckoning, and that Adam has begun to understand that there was a failure on his part, that he had been enticed by the very same motives, quite possibly, that Chava had, Visem Kelokim, by overreaching. He knew very well that he should not have eaten of the Eitz Hadas. He wanted more for himself. He wanted Visem Kelokim, Yodei Tovarai. He didn't want to have any restrictions whatsoever. So whether it was Tava, whether it was Kavod, whatever it was, I think Adam now appreciates that he is in fact mortal and that he will never be God. But if that's true, if mortality is part of life and death is part of life, then all of a sudden he looks at Chava and sees something remarkable. See, in a world where everybody's immortal, the capacity to produce life is perhaps not the most impressive commodity. Everybody just lives immortally and eternally anyway. But in a world in which you know your days are numbered, that you are finite and your time is finite and limited, and that the only way that we really live on is through the legacy that we leave, the progeny that we create, the notion that's so central to our concept of Masorah, of Midor Lador. So I think Adam reevaluates and says, wait a second, I totally missed something, not just critical, but something defining, something essential about this woman that's with me, is that he haisayim kochai, that she has the capacity to produce life. So maybe it's not, you know, as Rashi indicates, just a break in the story, or as the Radak indicates, well, now they sort of have a greater desire for one another because of their having consumed the Eitz Hadas, but maybe it's a result of the penalty and the punishment that Adam is given, namely, ki afarata velafarata shuv, in a world where mortality is the most basic fact of all of our lives, that we're only here for a certain amount of time. The capacity that she has, that candidly he does not have, which is the capacity to produce life itself, it's an amazing thing. And he begins to appreciate how valuable that really is. You live forever, maybe it doesn't seem that impressive. You're only here for a certain amount of time. Vayikra Adam, Shem Yishto Chava, he sees now the potential, Ki Hi Haisa, Eim Kol Chai. Perhaps that would be an explanation as to the first name change in Sefer Bereishis, which really reflects a change in Adam's perspective about, you know, who is this person with him? Is she merely just an extension of him? Or is it more accurately to say that she's so much more than an extension of him, but she has capacities that are so far beyond his own and are now the most important capacities, the most important faculties, which is to generate life in a world that will be now, from this point forward, because of his actions, defined by death itself. So we'll pick it up there, God willing, next week.